Arhas Asperson looked at his partners across the table as the wand blinked.
Found it. It's a tricky one, too.
Not too different from what we were told, I hope.
No, but apparently the captain's a bit paranoid, moves it around from time to time, and checks out the circuitry periodically to make sure it works.
So, we have to fix it with a built-in test circuit to fake the test?
Yes. I've got the details. Amazing how some of these people will talk if they think you sympathize with their problems. There's a petty light who's convinced the captain is down on him because of a practical joke actually concocted by someone else. He was so anxious to convince me how unfair and unreasonable Haken is that he practically handed me the whole mechanism on a chip.
So when can we do it?
The captain tested it 2 days ago. He's using some schedule of his own devising, but he's never yet tested it within 5 days of a previous test. So if we do the main part tomorrow, that should give us a few days to test the test, as it were.
I hope this is all right. I mean, we're stuck on this ship now, and we can't pretend we don't know what it's for.
I can. In anticipation of immortality, I can pretend any number of impossible things.
But if the Blood Horde shows up...
Here? Where our very efficient escorts will chase them into the arms of the neighboring cruisers? I refuse to worry. There's nothing we can do. As far as I'm concerned, there's a dangerously paranoid captain on this ship who might at any time see a dust spot on a vidscan and decide it's an enemy fleet, and then decide it's his duty to blow us all away. While I'm on this ship, I particularly want that device out of his control, lest I lose my chance at a long, happy life because of some knot-headed captain's mental quirk.
You're not happy about it either.
Yes, I am.
No. Every time you get flowery like that, it means you have doubts. Serious doubts. I think we ought to put the controls in our own hands.
Not a bad idea. If nothing else, it will keep you satisfied. Gory?
I like it. What time tomorrow?
Well... The easiest access will be through the inventory bay on Deck 10, the one across from T4, and there are weapons components in that bay.
How fortunate. Especially since the computer indicates they're located exactly in the right place.
You fiddle, Darhaas.
What use to have the ability if no use is made of it? It's true that I transposed some numbers in the database, but it was in a good cause.
I hope so. I do hope so.
With their most advanced equipment, they were able to locate and fox the scan, which supposedly kept anyone from tampering with the device. It took a day or so to create the blind loops they'd insert while they worked. Another day or so to create a convincing errand in that bay again. Then they were in. And the device, in its casing, looked just as they'd expected.
The tricky bit.
Rapidly, the case came open, the controls yielded to their intrusion, the codes changed, and the telltales stayed a friendly green.
Might as well run the test.
Might as well. We've got 10 minutes.
Arhas nodded to Losa, who pricked her intercept into the captain's control line and then inserted a 2-layer code. The telltales changed in sequence from green to yellow. She inserted another code, and they went back to green.
Lovely. I really do like it when we're right the first time.
If we were right.
3 rejuves low. 3 first class, guaranteed with the best drugs. We were right.
Arhas finished cleaning up, putting everything back as they'd found it. Even to the tiny piece of metal filing that just happened to have lain a 0.5 centimeter in from the right front corner of the case. Then he backed out, wiping the deck behind him.
We're going to live forever and be very, very rich.
That night, they brought out one of their treats from home and toasted each other. For the benefit of the ship's scan, they congratulated themselves on their progress so far in getting the weapons rekeyed. It made a delicious joke. Arhas sank into sleep and dreamed of the future, when he would be so rich and so well known that he'd never have to take a Blood Horde contract again. Esme was asleep, having a different dream for once, when the alarm brought her upright even before she woke. All down the passage, she could hear people moving around. Her heart stammered and she felt cold sweat break out. But as she dressed, the nature of the emergency became clear. Ships coming in for repair. Not a mutiny, not combat. Not, she told herself firmly, as bad for her. As Esme scampered along the passage and up ladders to her section, she felt the gut-twisting lurch of a ship overpowering its way through a jump point. Fear crawled back up her spine, vertebra by vertebra. DSRs were not built for racing and jumping. DSRs moved at the leisurely pace appropriate to their mass and internal architecture. She understood now, after the time in hull and architecture, why it wasn't a matter of adding more power, what the trade-offs were in making Kosciusko so big and so massive. What had happened? Where were they going? And more important, were they fleeing with trouble on their tail or running toward it? Holland architecture, like every other section, swarmed like a kicked anthill. In the departmental briefing room, Commander Ceviche was putting a cube in the display.
Ah, Suiza. Hook up your compad. This is going to be interesting.
Esme plugged in her compad and made sure it was set to record the display directly. Most of H&A was in the room when Ceviche started his briefing. The rest straggled in within a few minutes.
This is what we know, and we all know that it will be worse. Wraith is a patrol ship commissioned 10 years ago out of the Dalvery Yards, one of the SLP Series 30 hulls.
Esme now understood the groans. The SLP Series 30 had well earned the nickname Slippery, meaning its architecture lent itself to unauthorized and possibly damaging revisions.
She's been in combat against the Blood Horde, and despite their technological inferiority, they managed to wipe most of her scan systems and then bludgeon her with heavy explosive. There was shield failure of the starboard arc, forward of frame 19, with resulting damage to the forward weapons pods, and a hull breach here.
Ceviche's pointer circled the intersection of frame 19 with truss 7.
She was lucky in some respects. They knocked out her scans, but not the scans of her hunting partners. Sting and Justice were in the system, and they blindsided the Blood Horde ships and drove them off. Wraith had heavy casualties, of course, but they were able to patch things up enough to make it through one jump point. They couldn't manage, too. The hull patch was leaking again, and they had nothing more to use on it. So, as you all no doubt felt, we're jumping out to meet them.
No one said it this time, but the tense faces around Esme revealed their thoughts. DSRs stayed well behind any line of war for a very good reason. They couldn't fight, maneuver, or get away. If they were attacked...
I did remind our captain that old Koss isn't an escort. But we should be fine. Half our protection jumped ahead of us, and the rest will jump with us. We'll have Sting and Justice as well. And it looks like all the experimental stuff on Justice worked.
How long do we have?
Ceviche looked at the chronometer.
We expect to come into the same system in 78 hours and 18 minutes. We'll be making a series of fast insertion jumps coming out of the last at a slow relative V. They'll tow Wraith out to us. We won't know more about the hull damage until we come out of the last jump. We're pushing this ship to its max, and not hanging around anywhere to pick up messages. For all we know, Wraith won't make it until we arrive.
By the time Kosciusko came out of its last jump, Esme had been all over the ship on errands for Major Patak.
Don't be insulted, but you still don't know enough to be really useful. And I need someone to keep up with all the other departments. Ship's comm is overloaded, or will be.
Esme didn't feel insulted at all. She was quite willing to check with inventory control on the stock of fasteners, to ask the chief in weapons systems for an estimate of the damage that Wraith might have suffered from its own weaponry exploding when the hull breached, to crawl around the depths of the storage hold full of structural members, checking each one with instruments that should detect any dangerous deformities. She had always avoided medical, in the superstitious belief that any wandering psych nanny would see in her face that she had terrible secrets, and she'd be out on a psych discharge before she could argue. But in the last hours before they closed with Wraith, Patak sent her there to coordinate the search and rescue with what was known about the hull and its problems. Medical occupied a large chunk of T5, with onboard operating suites, decontamination suites, regen tanks, neural-assisted growth tanks, isolation chambers for exotic infectious diseases, diagnostic labs, the equivalent of a sector hospital. Esme found it in the same state of bustle as her own department, and was passed from one desk to another until she located trauma response. Esme handed Patak's cube of data, updated since the down jump by direct transmission from Wraith, to the lieutenant in charge of the extrication and trauma transport teams.
Hang around until I'm sure we understand all this.
He stuffed the cube into a reader. The display came up on the wall. The others milling around settled to look at it.
Forward hull breach. That'll mean decompression injuries in the nearest compartments beyond the breach.
In the breach itself, it meant deaths, the responsibility of personnel salvage, not extrication and transport.
Looks like truss failure here. We'll have to cut our way around that. Lieutenant, what will happen if we cut here and here?
He pointed. Esme pointed to alternative cuts, already on the cube display in green.
Sir, Major Patak believes it would be safer in terms of structural integrity to make the cuts here and here.
That'll just barely give clearance for our suits. We don't want to snag on anything, and we'll have casualties coming out. We need more room than this. We've told H&A before, we need a solid 2-meter clearance. Why can't we make this cut?
The lieutenant pointed again at his first choice. Esme thought she knew, but this was a job for someone with seniority.
I'll get Major Patak for you.
Do that.
Esme found Patak deep in one of the holds stocked with H&A gear and patched her through to the E&T commander. Then backed off as the air heated up around her.
And if you want several dozen more goddamn casualties and a lot of sharp-edged frickin' ejecta floating around, then you go on and cut to your heart's content!
Damn it, Major!
Now, what do you need for your suits? I'll get you space, just tell me.
2 meters.
Huh, all right. I'll send Sweeza back with a new plan that'll give you 2 meters. Round section or square?
Square would be nice, but round will do. If we're only one, it wouldn't matter,
yes,
but...
well, if the Blood Horde were recruits on a first mission, Wraith wouldn't be full of holes. I'll get back to you.
Patak turned on Esme.
Why are you looking so surprised? Didn't know I could turn the air blue, or didn't think I could calm down? Either way, it looks bad. Don't just stare at me, Lieutenant. You're making me nervous.
Sorry, sir.
2 stinking meters they want. Idiots. I suppose they can't be sure what they'll find in there, and they need space. But they certainly can't cut that one. If I lend them a structural tech to do the cutting, that shorts me on the main job. But it might save some lives and shouldn't cost any. All right, here's what you tell them.
Patak rattled off a series of contingent plans and sent Esme back to the medical deck. Esme wanted to ask why she didn't just call them on the comm, but this was no time to ask Patak anything. 8 hours before the last jump point, Esme and all but essential crew went down for a forced rest period, augmented by soporifics in the compartments. Esme understood the reason for this. Exhausted, twitchy people would make unnecessary mistakes, but she hated knowing that her calm repose had been created chemically. What if something happened and those awake forgot, or had no time, to turn on the antidote sprays? She was still worrying at that when she woke, feeling rested and alert, to the downshift alarm. It had worked, as usual, but she didn't have to like it. The Kosciusko had emerged at near zero relative V to the system it entered, the safest way to dump something of its mass out of jump space. Before Esme could get back to Patak's office in H&A, word had come down that Wraith's tow was within 20,000 kilometers. That made not only a bullseye, but a potential disaster.
An error of considerably less than 0.1% in exit V, and we'd have romped right into her and her damn fool escorts. But it does mean we can get to work quickly. Might save a few survivors in the forward compartments.
Tight beam comlinks were already up. Real-time data poured into Kosciusko's communications shack to be decoded and routed to the relevant departments. Esme spent the first hour or so watching the H&A data and sending it on to the subspecialists. Then Patak found another job for her.
Troll the stuff they're sending drives and maneuver and special materials. You're good at picking up connections. Someone upstairs may have misrouted something we need.
Patak herself had a model of the SLP Series 30 hull set up in both virtual and wireframe floor versions in the briefing room. Around it clustered the senior H&A engineers, making changes to reflect the peculiarities of Wraith as the data streamed in. Esme looked up often to peek at the progress. She had seen plenty of computer 3D displays of ship hulls, but never the scaled-down wireframe that now occupied a 5-meter length of the floor. It looked like fun, though the empty space along one forward flank had nothing to do with fun. She wondered if it was safe to set up for repair so close to the jump point exit lane. What if someone else came through? That wasn't her problem. She shook her head to clear that worry away and went back to scanning the topics routed to SpecMat. There. That was her concern. A request to schedule the fabrication of 420-meter crystal fibers. She checked the origin. If it wasn't someone in H&A, Patak wanted to know. And it wasn't. It was a damage assessment specialist aboard Wraith, who wanted them to replace some communications lines.
Major, I found it, sir.
Aha! Good for you! No, dears. You don't get to pick your own priorities.
Patak flagged the item, then sent it on to Commander Ceviche's stack.
They always want to, though. They think they're helping us, figuring out what they need when they don't realize the sequencing problem. We can't start anything in the spec mat until we know everything we need at the structural level.
What will come first?
Anything this badly damaged requires rebuilding from the main structure on out, just as if it were new. My guess is that the first things we'll want out of spec mat are much longer crystals, grown in clusters and resin bonded in the zero-G compartment. But the communications linear crystals come later.
I see.
Esme felt she understood much better why Patak had her doing this apparently unimportant job. She knew a lot more about hulls than she had, but this matter of sequencing repairs had never occurred to her. It made sense, now she thought of it.
Sweeza, how would you like a little adventure?
Adventure?
I need someone to do a visual survey of the hull breach, and everyone I've got is busy. You'll need EVA gear. Go over with the first teams, carry a vidcam and transmitter, and record everything for me.
Yes, sir.